Hi folks, hope all is well. This is Jim Carroll saying hello and welcome you to the latest Bantercast, the weekly podcast from the team behind a Banter series of talks and events. At Banter, we put on events in spaces and venues of all shapes and sizes, where a range of interesting people come along to tell stories, talk about their lives, and discuss various topics and themes. We record what happens in the room, and then we podcast the results. The journal's Aoife Barry, writer and podcaster Ellen Tanham, Conor Behan, who's DJ and writer, and senior clinical psychologist Mark Smith, joined us at Banter recently for an enthralling and far-reaching conversation about online behaviour. The question we had for our panel was just why have negative comments, offensive remarks, and downright nasty and abusive reactions to what people have to say become the norm in our social media timelines? Our four panellists came up with some great theories and ideas about why this is so.
Hi folks, welcome along to Banter number 161, I think it is. Thank you all so much for coming out. My name is Jim Carroll. Joined tonight by four fine people who are going to talk about basically the evolution of online behaviour, or how basically we went from actually being nice to everyone online to being absolutely raging lunatics. It's been one of the kind of fascinating evolutions I've ever seen. Like when we started going online, first of all, we were quite friendly, we were quite happy, we all kind of like exchanged good information with one another. It was a lovely playpen, and now you look at it and it's something else completely different. So we've got four fine people here, so I'm just going to ask each one of them to. We've got Mark Smith at the very end, Ellen Tan next to Mark, Aoife Barry next to Ellen, and next to me here is Conor Behan. So Mark, kind of like to say hello and give us an introduction.
Hi, I'm Mark Smith. I'm a senior clinical psychologist with the HSE, just with a particular interest in social media, because basically we're not taught anything about it during our training or afterwards, and it comes up so much in terms of the young people that we work with. I kind of just dived in and I'm here.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark. Ellen, say hello.
Hi, I'm Ellen Tanham. I'm a freelance writer and I write for like RT and the Business Post and places like that, and I'm on Twitter a lot. So.
And you also write for Head Stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Aoife.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Aoife. I work for the journal.ie. I'm assistant news editor there and a reporter. So obviously I'm on the internet all the time for work and have to be on Twitter all the time. And I suppose I've been interested in this topic because since I've been going on forums since I was young, and I don't think people were that forums that I was on when I was a teenager, or maybe that was just the ones I was on. So yeah, it's just interesting area to talk about.
Okay, thank you very much, Aoife.
I'm Conor Behan. I do kind of broadcasting RT cover work mainly on 2FM, a DJ in bars like the George in Dublin, do some writing for GCM, Pop Crush, places like that, and just spend way too much time on social media ranting about reality TV. So that has brought me here. Okay. So there you go.
Let's start with something then. I mean, like, you know, you said something there, Aoife. You kind of said, like, I mean, you can remember back in the day being on forums, you know. Do you think, like, I mean, am I being really nostalgic when I look back on forums and blogs as being, like, places where virtue was in triumph?
I'm afraid so. I think for the most part, people in general were nice, but there was always people being mean and people, you know, doing the equivalent of trolling as it was back in the day. I suppose I started off when I was about 14 using the internet, you know, when I got the chance, and what you do then is Google didn't exist. And so you'd, you know, use Alta Vista or like Ask Jeeves or something, and you'd say, or maybe it was me, you'd say chat room, and then you just go on some random chat room and like ASL, which would be age, sex, location. I'm feeling really old saying all of this.
No, I did that too. Yeah.
I'm really only 21, but
you end up 20.
Thanks. So you do that and you'd end up talking to randomers. And then as I got older, I joined the Freak Scene Forum, which is for a nightclub in Cork called Freak Scene. And we, all of us who'd go to this nightclub would go on there. And there was always, you know, like it would be infighting between people. There'd be people would hate other people. But then there'd be people who would make really good friends and have really good relationships with each other. Like I know people still to this day who, part of the reason I know them is because we'd go on the Freak Scene Forum and, you know, we'd socialise together every Wednesday and we'd have loads in common. And then it was onto Hot Press message board, and that again also had the kind of characters. But I think it's really like the internet reflects what real life is like as well, in that everybody's not nice in real life. People don't get on in real life, but because you have that sense of anonymity and that sense of there's like a gap there, I think people can exploit that and use that then if they want to be particularly mean. But I think most people are nice, so then you'll get most people on the internet are nice. But the negativity bias idea as well is that we attach ourselves, I think, to the negative stuff too. So we pay a lot of attention to that. Right. So that's my long-winded way of saying you're maybe right but not right.
Like you mentioned kind of anonymity and like, you know, the fact that like, I mean, a lot of that comes, a lot of the kind of like the attacks and the nasty stuff is coming from kind of like the fact that people can be anonymous. Like last couple of weeks as an experiment, like I've been following Ellen and Connor. I'm just kind of watching how much kind of like, I mean, how much I suppose like tweets you're putting out. I know. I'm not trolling. Oh. I'm not kind of shattering you. I'm just kind of like, I'm following you. And it's like there's a, you're both producing an awful lot of kind of comments day in, day out. It's like boom, boom, boom. Do you find basically because of the volume of, I suppose, the volume of social media posts you're making, Ellen, that you're attracting kind of more negativity?
Yeah, Ellen.
Don't worry, I'm asking you a question.
Nice.
Yeah, well, basically, it's really weird for me because I like graduated college like just over like about a year and a half ago, and in college, like the reason I used Twitter is because I was just bored, like in between like lectures and stuff, and then from then I kind of just, people seemed to like my tweets, so I just kept doing them, and then like in like after working in media and stuff for the last year, I sort of have a bit more of a following, and I definitely have noticed that like when you get over a certain threshold of followers, that like you get creeps, you also get people that will be really pedantic and stuff, you'll get the joke explainer backers to you, which is like probably one of my least favorite aspects of Twitter, because like it just really shocks me that people can be that serious about something that I just did for a laugh. Like they'll be like, actually I don't think that's what you mean. And I'm like, well, I tweeted it, so I know what I meant. So you get like people that kind of see you. It's really weird that people see you as not really as a person. It's more of like a weird entity that just exists in the cloud or whatever.
Right, do people see you as a weird entity, Connor?
I mean, yeah. I'm so, do you know what I'm really paranoid about? I don't know if people notice. It's a real journal thing to do on Twitter where like there'll be a quote unquote bad take by somebody. Could be very famous, could be a high profile political writer who to me is nobody but is super famous in the States. Mm-hmm. And their tweet would be screen grabbed, and people would be saying like, "This is like such a bad take." And I'm like, "There's some version of Twitter somewhere, probably in our end, where people going, here's Connor being banging on about the Real Housewives again." I'm like, I'm convinced someone is sharing screen grabs of my tweet, and that you can't see. You're like, it's like knowing someone like across town is talking shit about you. You know, I feel like that's probably happening somewhere.
Well, screenshots are scary. Yeah. It's like even WhatsApp.
Sure, I'm the same. I'm so shady. I'm like, it's not your one set. I'm like, I'm doing it. That's the problem. I'm like, it's been done about me behind my back, and I have to live with it. So,
Mark, give us a take from your desk, because I mean, like, you know, like these, Aoife, Ellen, and kind of Connor are like, I mean, on Twitter, like they're commenting on everything all the time. You're on Twitter as well. Like, I'm looking at your tweets. It's like, you know, you're talking about family stuff. You're talking about other things. The reason why you're here is just kind of like that. I'm curious about from the expert kind of like, I mean, clinical psychologist kind of view, like, I mean, what's your take on how things have kind of changed, how things and why things have changed as well?
So just a disclosure, I was kind of dial up, so some of those forums you're talking about didn't exist when I first got the internet, so I was a little late to it.
I was carrier pigeon, just so get that out there.
Okay, you win the oldest competition. Yeah, I'd agree with you. Human behavior has always been the same. I think what social media has done and the evolution of it is that there's more opportunity, there's also more people using it, so there's an exponential increase in it every single time. So the more people you interact with, the greater the possibility you're going to interact with somebody negative. But it also depends on the function of the behavior and why people are doing it. So I don't know if any of you kind of look at Trump's tweets, but for me, what's most
we've no choice.
No, it's nice because everyone just makes all these quote unquote funny jokes with them, being like, "I'm gonna tell you, Donald Trump, he's not."
What I find most interesting is that if you look at it and over the course of his tweets, usually the first 4 to 5 commenters are always the same people. So the function of it is, I'm going to get in there quick. I kind of think that they're almost looking at it constantly. He's tweeted, great, be the first one in. So it depends on the function. Is it to get a reaction out of someone? Is it, I want to increase my popularity? I want to get more attention. So I think it's, in some ways, it's kind of, there's a clamor for, I need to feed the ego. And I'll use somebody else's, you know, they'll talk about him being a narcissist. They'll talk about him kind of being a psychopath and all these kind of stuff. But yet, there's still this clamor of, I want you to notice me too. Mm. But yet, when he does it, they don't see that it's actually the pot called the black.
Yeah. It's just funny you even said the term notice me, because you notice, like, because I would do a lot of stuff about pop music and talk about music on the radio and write about it and stuff, and the sort of fandom around pop music on social media is so huge, and it ties back to the fan forums you were talking about. Even I remember when I was a kid, like, people were fans of Buffy and the X-Files and those communities and how they interacted. But now you look, if you go to the tweet of any big pop star or even like super famous drag acts from RuPaul's Drag Race, it's all like, mom, notice me. And then the tweets are also really vulgar because they're saying really like grossly sexual things, not to be like, this is my sexual fetish. It's just, I'm saying the most awful thing in the hopes that Charlie XCX will retweet this or her fans will follow me. And it's just funny that with Trump, the people doing that are journalists who are like opposed to him, but isn't they literally say, notice me, mom, like, please retweet. It's so strange. It's just that it's ego thing. Yeah.
Online behavior is not actually different from the real world behavior. It just, it makes it easier. So in the real world, especially for young people, about having their identity is, I'm going, my identity is going to be slightly different from yours, from the hairstyle I have to the way I dress, the music that I like. So there's, it's still the same. It just gives you an opportunity to do it to a greater audience.
Yeah.
Which brings its own risks then, because you can't really filter who is going to react to that.
Yeah, and like, I think everybody, you know, if we, you know, really got down to it, we all kind of want to be noticed and we want people to pay attention to us, even if you're not really outgoing, even if you're a bit of an introvert. And being online gives you that opportunity to have people like stuff and comment on stuff. And like, I mean, I like talking about, oh, I really like this album, it's great. And somebody going, yeah, I love that one, and their second one's great. And I get that little ego boost of, oh, somebody likes something I like too. But then it can be taken to real extremes. And sometimes that's because people are really lonely or, you know, there's something maybe going on in their life. And that, you know, so you can go from kind of the everyday just wanting a bit of a, you know, bit of a boost to taking it to extremes or to deliberately trolling, which I think is what is the most disturbing and upsetting part of it, is when people deliberately try to disrupt people's lives and insult them and treat them really badly, which I think we've all seen across Twitter, Facebook, everything.
Emails. It's not good.
Yeah, you get the emails from readers and stuff who are really mean and horrible. You know?
Let's go back to something Mark said there. You mean, Mark, you said, like, you mean that online life is a reflection of kind of, like, I mean, what happens in real life, you know? And, like, I'm looking at some, kind of some of the comments that have been made, and, like, I mean, like, it's funny, one of the panellists here told me he'd never been trolled as Connor, and, like, Connor ended up being in a troll fight with Deadmau5, the techno DJ who wears a mouse's head. And I was looking at some of the comments that Connor got, just an experiment again. And, like, I'm kind of trying to imagine if those comments will be said in real life and how people react in real life. Like, do you think, based on that case, that, like, I mean, these comments are a manifestation of something that people keep hidden?
I suppose the first thing I thought about with the trolling was, I'm not popular enough to be trolled. I've never been trolled either. And why not?
Tomorrow. What's the word, dudes? Male privilege.
I need to get popular to get trolled. I think people always give that advice in schools, and teachers give that advice, is don't say anything online you wouldn't say in the real world. Mm-hmm. But people have a false sense of security. Well, that doesn't count. That's not the real me, so I can say it anyway. But it still is a manifestation of their personality. There's this cognitive dissonance where they think it's separate, so it's okay. It won't reflect badly on me as a person. But it still does. Mm-hmm. And they do have that thought that, well, look, if I say it online, the person is an avatar, so therefore it won't hurt their feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we use these justifications and excuses to justify our behaviour. But that we wouldn't do that in the real world, because it's harder to get that distance from it, because we're saying it to a person who will react, they'll have facial reactions, their body will react to it. So because of that distance between us and the person, we think, well, it wouldn't hurt as much, but yet it does serious damage.
It's really upsetting, like, when you get something mean said to you, because I think the person doesn't really realise, well, some, like, I think it's easier for them to distance themselves from you as a human being who, you know, when you get your feelings hurt and you feel like kind of like someone winded you. That can still happen when it's someone who sent you a tweet or like a mean email or something. Like, but what you're saying about anonymity, I find really interesting, because when I, in one of my other jobs, I was like, I was like admin to like a Facebook page with a pretty large audience. And what is just mad to me is that people are willing to say the most inflammatory stuff on Facebook with their name. And it's like a picture of them and their two kids. And they're like, you're a fucking bitch. And you're like, Barry.
No relation. It's always people who are like, you know, saying something really racist, and you'll go onto their Twitter account to be like, dad of two, love my girls, support Liverpool. And you're like, why would you do that? Like,
so
you know?
Does this come down then to kind of like being multiple identities?
I think there's a naivety sometimes
in
some of it, in terms of that, you know, nobody will know it's me, like you said, if the picture up, or they won't click the link. So say a petition in the journal, they'll make some inflammatory comment on it and not realise, I think sometimes, that if you click on the profile, it'll bring you to the social media, and suddenly you know who they are. And there's lots of naivety, I think, in general, in terms of social media and that presence and how easy it is to find out who we are. So I would have talked to a group of young people a couple of months ago about social media, and they laughed at the fact that I was going to tell them about social media, because what would I know as a dinosaur? But when I got into it, there's this kind of almost omnipotence around, well, we know everything because we're young people. But yet when I talked to them about geotagging and be able to find the metadata to locate them within a foot of where they are at any one time, if the location is turned on the phone, they were terrified, because they had no idea. So again, it was that innocence of, well, I can say whatever I want, but actually you could still be tracked down to within a foot of wherever you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get people, sometimes we email us saying, I didn't realise that the information when I left a comment, you know, actually could be linked back to me, even though it's clear they're signing up with their Twitter or Facebook account. And they say, I'm looking for a job, and I Googled myself and this comment I made came up. And, you know, I think that's kind of that gap there, that people don't realise that, like, you leave a little footprint mm-hmm. online. I'm sure if you Googled my stuff on the Hot Press forum, it would come up, you know. So it's like, you have to kind of realise too, but you don't, because the internet doesn't feel like a real thing, even though it feels real. Yeah.
But
so
it's forever.
Kind of, false dichotomy.
It's media literacy as well. Like, I just am banging on this all the time on social media and just to friends. Like, in a way, it's been able to read the images you see on social media, particularly for younger, because there's such an abundance of them, but also just how to use it. And that's sort of, like, remembering that it's a really fun tool, but if you're not smart about how you use, like, we just don't teach anybody that, particularly not young people, because even those of us who are a bit older and use a lot still aren't as fluent as we like to think we are. As much as we're good at, like, linking our tweets in the thread, we're like, actually, what is the metadata machine? Should I trim? You know, it's just that there's so much stuff we're not kind of teaching ourselves, and the companies that run these things don't really want us to be taught them, because it's easier for them to just run off with their data or whatever, not to be like one of those big data, like, conspiracy heads. But you know what I mean? Like, brands
they
don't
want your data. Like, they do want it.
They do. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, brands don't want, and things don't want us to really be, like, taught
hyper-aware.
These things. But that's really, I think, we bang on about, like, Twitter is bad, we should close it down, people are being abused. And I'm like, well, yes, horrible stuff is happening, but actually, we're also not teaching people how to, like, not be horrible to each other, you know. Like, it's a bigger thing, I think.
So what else, I'm curious about what happens next. I mean, we've all kind of discussed, like, you know, there's good, there's, let's be honest as well, there's a lot of good stuff about being online as well. I mean, you instant communication, you know, you're finding friends, you find like-minded souls, you're finding people in the same music as you, you know, that's all possible. What I'm curious about is, like, at what stage did it become obvious to all of us that there was a problem, that, like, I mean, there was an anger issue, that basically online needed to take anger management classes? You know, at what stage did it turn nasty, and why?
I feel like it's Reddit and, like, 4chan.
Or, like, 4chan, yeah.
And MRAs, and how MRAs, you can, there's a direct correlation between them and the rise of neo-Nazism, to put it bluntly, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of that really scary thing where you can really link actual real-life news events happening to forums and to anonymous behaviour in somewhere like 4chan, where they can create, like,
really angry,
fake news, quote-unquote, you know?
It's like angry young guys. Like, you can, like, I read a really good article, I can't remember where, but it was, like, linking, like, pickup artists and, like, that kind of movement to, like, this, like rage that a lot of people felt, that they were then able to channel straight into this kind of, like, weird nationalism that we're seeing a lot now.
It's funny too, because when you asked me to do this and I said to you, like, I'm super interested, but I knew that you guys were on the panel and you had much more direct experience of harassment, which also ties to just being women and the idea that women in general, and this sadly is something that women experience in a lot of spaces already. And I think sometimes you're right, there was a point where we all went, why are we all so angry on the internet? And also, why are there people who are that angry and that hateful? But also that weird thing of, like, gay people and women and people from different racial backgrounds, and of course how those all mix and match and whatever, going, this is actually kind of what it's like for me when I go to a nightclub or walk down the street. In a weird way, this is, like, sort of the mirror of the fact that if I go, like, I know so many straight girls who'd be like, I like to come see you DJ in a gay bar because I know I'm not going to have a guy just be, like, horrendous and try and grab my ass. And in my head I'm going, well, fuck, I don't even have to think about that. Like, and I'm someone who's trying to be more aware and has also had bad experiences just being gay. So in a bizarre way, it also mirrors to stuff that we kind of know is there. Like, that's the shitty thing. Yeah. It's not just like, oh, people are so mean. We're like, all people going, yeah, and what? Like, big surprise, which is probably part of the anger thing as well. People going, of course, this is not stopped. It's been around forever.
It's giving people... Just because I'm probably going to say probably similar things, but, like, it gives people that chance to actually speak out and say, I'm experiencing this, this is affecting me. You know, there's been times when you'll see like a thread or kind of a thread by a particular person, say, like, a woman talking about sexual harassment, then you'll see so many replies about that, and you'll see people talking about Black Lives Matter and what it's like, you know, to live in Ireland, of, you know, in all different ways. And I think that people use the internet as a really good platform to actually talk about other experiences and what it is to kind of live here or live in different countries. And it's really eye-opening that way, in the sense I feel like I've learned so much from people. I'm like, I never actually thought about that, you know, this idea of privilege and stuff like that too. But at the same time, it means that you see the kind of the absolutely worst element of the worst parts of society being enacted, like, or being acted out right in front of you too. So, you know, you see the good side and the bad side, and then you wonder, you know, how on earth do you get people not to behave like that? Or is it a good thing that we're actually more alert to it? Or like, you know, I don't even know if you can come up with any solution to it, but it's both eye-opening and then also incredibly depressing at the same time. Like, I sometimes look on the internet and Twitter and, you know, various sites and just feel like, what the hell is going on, and is there anything that's going to change at all? But, you know, we're having these sort of discussions. I suppose you could say it starts with that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think for me it changed with Ask FM. I think that was for me when I knew that the online world was really having a tragic even impact in terms of the real world, because mm-hmm. as it was with the number of completed suicides of young people, where they specifically noted afterwards in the notes they left that it was because of the bullying that occurred. I think the most disappointing thing for me was, yes, people started to take notice. AskFM did nothing about it. And it was only when the advertising revenue started getting pulled from them because of negative publicity, then they started talking about putting in moderators. Mm. That, you know, the life of a young person wasn't enough to try and control it. But I suppose you also be heartened in terms of the Simi being pulled from the App Store in terms of the Irish content. So we show that if we start actually talking about these things and it gets a bit of momentum, you can actually get something positive out of it.
Right. I want to go back to what you said earlier on, Ellen. You pinpointed it kind of at Reddit and 4chan, you know, as where one place where this kind of began to bubble up, you know. What do you think, any reason why you thought it was those particular forums where things bubbled up? Was it a kind of lack of censorship? Was it a lack of openness? Was it the fact that, like, I mean, all the kind of like nasty bullies in the world decided to kind of go there one morning?
I think it's like multi-layered. Like, I think first of all, it's like patriarchal notions of what it is to be a man, and then they're like discussing that online, and then there's also like this really weird, like, a lot of guys would feel kind of like unfulfilled and stuff, like not feeling entitled to attention, say, from women and stuff, so they would be able to channel that anger into forums with other like-minded guys that would be, you know, in agreement, and they'd egg each other on and be like, you know what, we are in the right, we should actually be entitled to these women's bodies, time, and like space and stuff. And then even when you can see like parallels with like Gamergate and stuff, like if you look at someone like Anita Sarkeesian and all the stuff that she went through just for being like, put a woman in the game, put a woman in, maybe put a woman there, a woman here, like, it's the blowback that she got for that, I think, is like, that to me is like the most worrying aspect of like online culture now, is like this like toxic kind of masculinity, not to bring the conversation down, but that's what I think the problem is, like, mainly. And also like racism and stuff, but that's all part of, like, I could talk about like late stage capitalism, but I'm not going to.
I love that as an aside. I hope we could get into that later. No,
but it's true. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up Gamergate, because Gamergate to me, it was horrific, but it was fascinating to watch how it developed. And like, you know, gaming is kind of one of my kind of cultural blind spots. I know very little about it, and I remember kind of just immersing myself in trying to understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. And it struck me that like it was one of the first times that kind of like someone like me, who'd be like, I mean, a straight white middle aged man, was kind of going like, what is this about? Like, this is someone being attacked over simple opinions, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, it speaks to, you know, like what Ellen was talking about there, people who feel like they're not listened to, you know, the idea of young men feeling like they're not listened to, and specific young men who are kind of benefiting from the whole kind of patriarchal culture, and people, men who feel that equality or diversity actually means that it's kind of, you know, they're becoming a minority, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, impinging on their rights. So you see those kind of movements happening as a reaction to the fact that the world is actually, in little increments, becoming more, you know, equal, that women are getting more rights, that LGBT kind of communities are getting more rights, are actually getting just to be visible at all, which is like this massive thing. So I think that you're seeing all these things happen, and what you're seeing is, maybe like, I'd be an outsider on the gamer kind of front as well, I wouldn't have a clue, but it, to me, it was like this little microcosm of other things that are happening, very similar to the kind of red pill idea, the guys that all kind of gather there talking about trying to neg women and get them to sleep with them or whatever. So you're just seeing these little elements that are little fires starting up as reactions to how the world is actually changing, and it's showing how unhappy some people are about going from the majority and being powerful to the minority. Which,
people just don't like change. I think it's like
not minority, but
like the Gamergate thing, like you were saying, it's like just one small subsection of like a larger thing. It's just people are funneling their anger into different subject areas. And like Gamergate's just one of them.
And they have a platform to do it, and you have, like you said, the group mentality. If you're in a group of people and somebody says, I really don't like X, you'll kind of get people going, yeah, I kind of don't really like X, I don't, yeah, maybe I don't. So
and then you only speak out information that affirms your opinion that's wrong anyway, like to kind of reinforce that you are actually correct, and it's not just like that the world is changing and you're afraid.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with kind of like young people, Mark, in terms of like, I mean, in terms of consultations, in terms of like talking to them, are you seeing evidence of what like, I mean, what Ellen and kind of like Aoife are talking about there? That sort of like that sense of isolation, that sense of kind of like, I mean, loserdom in a way, you know, the fact that like the good times are over.
No, not necessarily. I think it's part of the problem is that they have a perception that, that older people, like myself, that we shoot the medium. So the online world is so much part of their core identity now that if you judge the medium, you're judging them as well. So they're very reluctant to, because I think you're going to automatically think negatively of it. It is a part of them. It's something we have to acknowledge. But it's... Sometimes I think it's a way into them, because they expect us to come in with set questions about, tell me about your depression and your self-harm and your suicide. I generally start off with, tell me what you're on. What are you on Twitter? Are you on Instagram? Are you on Tumblr? And that's usually kind of... Tumblr is one that usually raise eyebrows and they go, yeah, I'm on Tumblr. And then they pause and then they move on quickly because they don't want to ask me any more questions about Tumblr, and they presume I won't know about it. So depending on the particular medium that they're on, I will know a lot about kind of their mental health. So most of the young people I see are a little bit socially anxious, and they will use Facebook, but purely only for Messenger, because they wouldn't want to put a profile picture up in case it didn't get enough likes, or they will literally just scan through the feed but not liking anything, because if you like it, then you're giving away part of your identity, which then can be judged. Tumblr in particular would be one I'd be concerned about in terms of the pro-ana sites. I suppose it's the largest collection of the pro-anorexia sites on the internet. And when they usually, when they say about Tumblr and I react to it, I usually come back afterwards when their parents aren't there and say, tell me about Tumblr. And again, they don't expect me to know anything about it. So knowing a lot about their online world and asking about the online world is telling you a lot about their mental health and how they function and their sense of themselves. So we have to kind of embrace it and not be fearful of it, and get in and experience that world as much as their offline world.
Okay. So like, I mean, we've talked a lot so far about, like, I mean, social media platforms and kind of like comments there, and like, I mean, people attacking people, kind of like, I mean, that herd mentality. I'm curious because, I mean, one of the areas, I suppose, Aoife, you can kind of like talk to this quite well, both of us can, is just like, I mean, one area where, like, I suppose an awful lot of kind of online behavior began to deteriorate was in below the line comments in terms of newspapers and online forums, online articles with online publications like the Journal. Like, obviously, you and me are both kind of like are students of that game, because we worked in that sewer. Sorry, we worked in that world for so long. And I'm curious to get your take on it. Like, I mean, did you see a distinct deterioration at one point? Or has it been both say, the Journal and the Irish Times have made efforts to kind of clean it up? And the Irish Times, like, I mean, they brought in registration and, like, I mean, it cleans up to an extent. But I kind of know some certain columnists, they're still attracting kind of, like, file. What about, like, I mean, what about the Journal?
Yeah, I don't know if you saw, but recently we did change up some stuff in our comment section. And that was really, you know, a big effort to try and make it more of a positive space for people. So we got rid of, like, the red thumbs, for example. Some people did not like getting rid of the red thumbs. We got a lot
of... anything about it.
Yeah, they were literally
red,
like,
thumb that they were gone.
These red thumbs, and you're like, oh, okay, all right, it's all right. They're like, it's creating a, you know, a safe space for snowflakes, is what some people thought it actually was doing.
We ban that term.
Can I put an asterisk? Can I have an asterisk besides snowflakes? I'm not joking you. When people started talking about snowflakes, I spent about 2 hours online trying to find out what the fuck were snowflakes.
A special snowflake. Yeah.
And the idea of a snowflake is somebody. I mean, it's supposed to be somebody who's so super sensitive about being PC.
It's a play on this thing of your parents told you were a unique special snowflake, but you're not, you're just like everyone else. It's like a weird folk thing, like kids are told to make themselves feel good, and it's been turned into a weird pejorative. You think your opinion as a liberal is you're a snowflake. It's strange.
Millennials,
it's part and parcel of that, like, so media strategy, which is just to shit on anyone under 30.
Like, how dare you're so lucky, you're so privileged, and well, dare you want such nice coffee all the time.
Speaking as an old man, I remember when I was kind of like, mean, like, of that age of 20-30, people older than you were shitting on you as well in the media. So it's going around, you know.
But I think you know, on the topic of comments, like, I think the Guardian brought in comments before the Journal started anyway, and so I remember looking at the Guardian and reading their comments and just thinking, who on earth are these, like, what, like, they were just so mean. But I think, you know, in general, comment sections tend to really distill the kind of negativity down into those areas. I'm not entirely sure why. You know, if you wanted to be really cynical, you could be, you know, could say, like, you know, the empty vessel makes the most noise kind of thing, or that's kind of rude, obviously, to commenters. But the idea of, I think people are more attracted to leaving negative comments, and they're more attracted to leaving a comment if they're really strong opinions about it. Mm-hmm. And often that really strong opinion isn't, I really love this, it's amazing. It's more like, I hate this, it's terrible. So I think, you know, it's commenting issues aren't just on one particular website, they're across the board. And I have noticed, you know, say for The Guardian, they do stuff like they pick out their favorite, like, good comments, and they put them up top, and they do all these things to highlight positive comments. And I think those kind of things do make an effort. And I think I've seen anecdotally, you know, definitely an improvement in our comments since we made more of an effort to be like, this is your space, be nice, you know, we've got new comments policy, etc. But I don't think you'll ever go into any comments section and see a whole stream necessarily of people leaving really nice comments, unless it's maybe a personal story. We find that like people share kind of tragic things that have happened to them. You'll often find people coming in and saying, this happened to me, I suffered too, I understand how you feel. And those are when you tend to get it. Now, you also do get people who come in and are like, F you and your terrible life-changing experience, I don't care, depending on how, you know, on PC that person is or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think comments are necessarily ever going to be 100% brilliant, but I think you can take steps to change them.
Yeah, I think that step begins with kind of like being whoever controls that publishing platform as well. And I've been convinced for many times that there are certain publications, none of which we mentioned earlier here tonight, but there are certain publications who've made a kind of like almost like a clickbaity kind of like attraction out of their comment site. You know, you won't. It's almost like you won't believe what Egghead here has said about this article. You know.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is the first comment. If you look, like the first comment on the commenting section tends to determine sometimes how the rest of the conversation goes.
It's like a coin toss.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So if you get somebody who comes in and is like, I absolutely hate chairs in a venue. Everybody be like, chairs in a venue are terrible. But if they come in, they're like, they're the best invention ever. It's like so bizarre. And I think sometimes you can pay a little bit too much attention to what commenters are saying, and you have to take a step back.
Yeah.
And then other times, they're like, oh God, they're right. There's a typo there, or you know, actually that's a new thing I didn't think of, you know, and I had something else that I've completely forgotten that I was going to say in relation to it, but anyway.
But that thing you're saying about like, oh, there's a typo there, like it goes back to what Helen was saying earlier on about people being pedantic or explaining jokes. You know, there's times that someone's kind of say, well, you know, there's a typo in that article, and you're thinking, yes, I know there's a typo in that article, I'm trying to get someone to correct it. You know, you can take it that way as well.
Yeah, like send me an email, or people can be rude in email too.
People
well,
are just really rude. Like, people are rude and have no manners. Yeah. But like, I always think as well, like when I used to get upset by comments and stuff, like if say I wrote something about like LGBT stuff or whatever, and it would be people being like, I mean, all due respect, but you're disgusting. And you'd be like, oh. But then I always am like, someone told me before, I can't remember who it was someone I used to work with, and they were like, there are so many people that will just read something and not say anything either, good or bad. And they're the majority of the audience of like wherever your stuff is going up. So like that made me feel better. I was like, it's like a very small amount of people, but it still is kind of upsetting, especially when it's in like a personal capacity, because it's usually when you're a woman on the internet is.
Okay. I want to kind of go back to something that I think all three of you kind of, like the three of you, Bar Mark had mentioned, but I think the three others mentioned, and that was like, I mean, you kind of all said in passing about emails, comments, you know, with some of the emails, when someone kind of goes to the effort of finding your email address and to kind of email and go, you suck, you know? How do you, like, you know, that's an acceleration of kind of rage, you know? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that? Do you email people back and go, you suck too? Or do you email people back and try and take them on, or just ignore it?
Spam.
Okay,
pop it
spam.
Into spam.
This makes up like, you won't believe what I said next. Or clickbait reveal.
No, I think it's a tricky one, because sometimes I do email people back, and if they're emailing me about a work thing and they ask me something, but they're really mean about it, which is like, sometimes people are really mean and sometimes they're lovely and they're just like, I love you. I might occasionally be like, thank you so much for that, but I really like when people aren't rude when they email me, like as if I'm their parent or something, which is a bit like
admonish
don't
them.
Be mean, you know. It's a bit rude, but it also brings up the idea of like, what the hell do you do when somebody's emailing you really abusive emails? Or I've had people call me the C word or whatever. I'm like, fair enough, you think I'm on whatever, but like, also please don't constantly email me. And like, you know what you do if someone sends you a threatening tweet? You feel like an absolute idiot if you think, should I go to the Gardaí about this?
But
like,
you feel embarrassed, you should go to the Gardaí about it, because you do feel scared, but then you're like, this is just words on a screen, but I feel kind of panicky and I think I might not go to this event tonight now, because I'm kind of freaked out.
It's that weird thing of whether it happens in real life, online, whatever, if somebody's, and it's not someone said something to me, oh, I'm a snowflake, it's that thing, if someone throws a slur at you or really goes at you, they know that whatever happens, they've done their, and that you can sometimes fire back and win. Like, I've definitely been able to like politely go, hold on, woman, I've worked at drag queens for 10 years, you're not going to get away with that, I've heard a lot worse, you know, like lol haha. But generally you kind of want to take the high road, because you don't want to give them more ammo, but they also know they've already got their hit in, so like, even if you don't reply, they'll go, well, she didn't reply and I told her she's a Z word, I've won. But if you reply, then in their head they've also won. You kind of can't win.
And they're like, now we're going to fence together in conversation.
Like, it's like, it's the toilet of the internet. It's like, once you're down there, it's fucking all shit, like you're stuck. You're like, what do you do? You know,
it's true. But it's like, I think, you know, when things get a little bit threatening, and I know some people who've gotten emails saying like, I know you're here, or I know you're going there, or like, you know, if you say on Twitter, like, I knew I was coming here tonight, and I know there's certain person who reads my emails quite regularly and, or reads my tweets, and you know, I'm like, that person now knows that I'm here and I'm doing this. And I think that kind of that paralyzes me a little bit, where I think you do not know who is actually following you around.
Yeah,
I'm not going to be normally saying I'm down in Tesco doing my shopping on a Saturday night, or hopefully not a Saturday night. That'd be really bad.
Let's party.
Like, I'm not stalking you anymore.
Meet me in L5 for a rave.
Boring, but or whatever. But yeah, so you kind of have to be careful about that. I know people who, like my somebody I know, put up details on Snapchat by accident that had their email address on it, and somebody hacked into their iTunes, their everything, and they did it just by accident. And I think that, like, that was a big learning kind of for them, where like you think you know your followers, you think you know people, and actually, you'd like, there's always going to be a bad apple somewhere.
Just takes
and that's
one
scary.
Freak as well. Like, that's the thing.
Just takes one person.
And that goes back to what Mark said earlier on about like how that online behavior sort of like reflects what is in real life. Because, you know, I'm sure in years gone by, Son of Sam or whatever, was kind of like, was using similar tracking devices. Mm-hmm. They weren't on Twitter or Instagram, but they were using similar tracking devices.
I'd much prefer to be threatened on by email or online than I would in the real world. Because then I have a record
really?
Of it. because if someone comes up the street and threatens you, he said, she said, you've no way of proving it.
Yeah.
So at least you've got a record of it that you can actually keep and retain and say, okay, here's something I have. But I'd agree with you in terms of that dilemma. Do I respond? Do I not? And that taking that high road. Because it does come back down to basic kind of something like classical conditioning. So if the person is looking for a particular response and you give it to them, you've rewarded that behavior. Therefore, they're likely to do it again. And I think there's that instinct sometimes in us to be assertive. And I'm going to stand up for myself. Yeah. I'm not going to take any shit off you, and I'm going to show you. But if that's what they want from you, they're more likely to come back and keep getting it again. So it's that dilemma internally. Do I be assertive and stand up for myself and not take this shit from anybody? Or do I ignore it and hope that the behavior is going to go away? And you can't be guaranteed either way, depending on what the function of the behavior that the person wants out of you.
It's interesting because I'm thinking about like what Aoife just said, that like in terms of getting rude emails, you know, and I'm thinking about the many times, obviously one or two rude emails my time, and like when you respond to them, if you respond to them in a kind of a nice way, they often back down, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like it's fighting vileness with niceness.
It's called validation.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard to keep angry with someone if you validate them. So if you go, you're absolutely right, I can see where you're coming from, I understand your perspective completely. Oh,
that didn't work. If you're nice to a mean customer, they get really freaked out. You're like, oh, I'm really sorry. Yeah. And then they're like, I can't shout at you anymore.
Yeah, I was literally just going to say, this is like, it's a real life anecdote, but I tell this all the time because it's a reminder of people. It's also, people just want to take out their rage. Sometimes people do concentrate the harassment on you because they have been vendetta against you and they're horrible. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those comments, like particularly I think Twitter, people fire off a tweet sometimes and don't think. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, a guy came up to me when I was DJing. He was like, do you actually like the music you're playing? And there was a pause and I said something like, where do you work? And he said, blah. And I said, I don't come to your job and talk to you like this. And it wasn't like mean about it. I said, and kind of went like this, and he went in his head. I could see the cogs go in his head of, okay, like there was probably a better way for me to ask for the song I wanted. Like, it's just that thing of sometimes people just want to be like, you're an asshole. And I go, well, you probably are too if you're talking to me like this, aren't you? Like, just saying, you know, you kind of politely, like, I just wouldn't do that myself. Yeah. And they kind of go, oh, you're a human being with feelings, I forgot.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing about online. You can kind of, like you say, remove the sort of human factor of, in real life, you'll see the crumpled up face and you'll actually be like, oh, I would actually, why did I say that, you know? So it's a weird one.
Okay, so apart from removing the red tome from the journal, apart from being nice to kind of people, what are the other possible solutions we can think about taking the angry and the rage of online life?
I think what Connor was saying about media literacy would go like a really long way. Like if you started that from like people like in schools, I think, because like there is obviously like stuff about social media, like people know how to use it, like they know how to download the app, they know how to actually physically use the app, but there's like things like etiquette and stuff like that I think it would be really worth looking at. And just like maybe I'm sure that there are people doing this now, but like you, like tying in like people's, like trying to tie people's self-esteem less to social media, like do you find that that's going to be a hard thing to tackle as like teenagers get older?
Yeah, well, I think especially because if you've got low self-esteem and you don't feel very good about yourself, and then you go online seeking validation, I want people to make me feel good, and then you get someone who kind of trolls you or says something nasty about you, you have this idea of, okay, I don't fit in well in the real world, now I've gone online and I can't even fit in there, so you end up feeling worse than you did. So if you go online seeking validation to make up for kind of your low self-esteem, it's a really difficult place to try and find it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the ways that we manage the online world now is about, it's a concept from a program we run called Radical Acceptance, where we radically accept, if we're going to give people voices, give them the ability to be able to comment and to engage in discussion, we have to radically accept there's going to be assholes out there. Mm. So we don't, in terms of the real world, and it is the same thing, we don't think that everybody has to be nice and everyone has to, they should adhere to kind of socially acceptable codes of conduct. But we know bad people are out there and do bad things. And in the same way, it's going to happen online because, again, it's an extension of people's personalities mm-hmm. in the world. So if we accept that, like you were saying earlier on, the majority of people don't say bad things.
Yeah.
Then the majority of people online aren't bad, but there are people who are going to stand out, and they stand out because of the stuff that they say.
Mm-hmm.
But it's how we react to it, how we understand it, and how we reinforce it. But they're going to be there no matter what we do.
Mm. You don't think in any way, then, shape or form, Mark, that kind of like that such bad behaviour can be reverse engineered, that they can be, it can be solved in that way?
Not if they're, if they're getting the attention and the reinforcement that they want from it. Why would they stop?
Mm.
So I think unless there is a moderatorship available. So I know on boards.ie, they're very good at that. They have moderators and it's self-moderated so that if you cross the line, you're given a warning. And if you continue to cross the line, then you're banned. But not every online presence is able to do that or sometimes wants to do it because of maybe the attention
that it gets. Well, it's kind of a legal grey area for news websites as well in terms of commenting. You know, there is definitely a grey area there in terms of who's responsible for the publication of the comments. But when it comes to sites, say, like Twitter or Facebook, they have a lot more control because it's kind of set in stone, really, you know, who's publishing it or publishing the content. And I think even Twitter have said themselves, like, we do have an issue with people's behaviour online, so it's up to them to... With the Nazis and this and that.
Those damn Nazis ruined everything.
You know, for God's sake. I mean,
Jack Dorsey was in town today, you know, and like again he had that line you just kind of said there, Aoife. It's like, yeah, we know about this, we're trying to do something about it. Dude, you know about this for two or 3 years.
Yeah.
Do some, at least Facebook and
are you verifying them?
Yeah. At least Facebook brought something in now when it comes to fake news. They've got that pop up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it just applies to the Irish slave story that, like, I mean, many people mm-hmm. have kind of said this story is fake, that it's not verified. Yeah, you sure want to share it?
But then you'll also have, you know, instances on Facebook where you will, you know, flag something, not flag something, like report something, you know, report a photo or whatever because you think it's offensive. And mm-hmm. I've done that for a couple of things, and you might get an email back saying, there's actually nothing wrong with this.
Tiny loophole somewhere.
Yeah. And you're like, well, breastfeeding photographs are taking off Facebook or whatever. Like, you know, there can sometimes be, and I get that sometimes it's an algorithm, sometimes it's a human who literally has to sift through every single photo. Mm-hmm. I get that it's not going to be instant, but, you know, you'd hope that, like, technology would be improving to the fact where sites like that can just lay the smackdown on people before, you know, they actually get to the stage where it's just too much, which unfortunately, but you have had people jailed in the UK for trolling and stuff like that too, based on their tweets and stuff like that too. So, I mean, that's good to see. Mm. You obviously don't want to see people thrown into jail, but at the same time, you do want to see people, you know,
well, you do want
told,
to see people,
you know, they can't be behaving like that. Yeah. And this is a consequence of it. You troll somebody, a famous feminist activist, I think, I don't think she was an MP, but she was politically active. And two people over the trolling were sent to jail. So, like, that's a bit of a message. Now, they were hardcore trollers,
Even the whole, like, when Milo got taken off Twitter and there was this thing of his followers were like, we'll just make him stronger. And then they were showing there was that graph of the engagement, I think, on either his Facebook or his website or some other platform he created for himself.
Yeah.
And that there was a huge nosedive. So in some ways, I do think there's an onus on the platforms to starve the oxygen of people who are clearly being hateful, and finding that line between, there's a big difference between someone being conservative political around economic policies versus maybe actually goading people about race or being gay or
like
a myriad
Leslie
of things.
Jones and the fact that, like, that went on for, like, far too long, all of the harassment that she got, and that it was spearheaded by Milo, and then he remained on Twitter for, like, a good few months after all that.
Does feel like it needs to be tighter. And then I think it's a weird thing where in both real life and online, like you were saying, we need to give people the tools to sort of go, know that life's not always going to be easy, but also it's just a thing of, like, social media is filling the gap that media always fills of. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about our feelings, we pour them into, like, the music we like or the games we play or whatever, that obviously we're not good at sharing how we're feeling with each other in every day, or teaching kids, like, if you feel like shit and have low self-esteem, that's fine, just don't seek it from selfies or whatever, because that's just a high that will never end. Like the way people might seek things through addiction or whatever. There's gaps in our everyday discussion and our lack of literacy around media and everything.
Like empathy and stuff.
Exactly. Like, I feel like such a Gwyneth Paltrow, Goop.com. Let's teach everyone empathy. But, like, that's kind of what it is, you know?
Like, everyone is a person and has feelings. Yeah. And I think, as well, people always go into online stuff with, like, pre-armed with all their stuff they're angry about. And they're, like, literally, like, it's a scattergun approach. So they'll just try and find a target, and it could be something one day and it could be another thing the next, but it's the feeling that they have about themselves or something that's going on in their life that is propelling that comment or that tweet or whatever.
Yeah, like there's that famous story about Lindy West who met her troll, and she had a This American Life episode and an article in The Guardian about it. Like, it's really worth checking out, where like the guy actually was having a really shitty time and a shitty life, but he somehow thought it was okay to impersonate her dead dad, you know? So it's just, people can go to real extremes. I'm sure, like, Mark, you could probably give a bit more of an insight into why people might do that than we might.
Yeah, I've met young people who struggle again in socially, in terms of how to interact with people and how to understand emotions, and they go on and deliberately. So I suppose when we hear about trolls, we automatically assume, oh, they're big, they're bad, they're bullies, and they're doing it for bad reasons. Mm-hmm. I've met young people who deliberately troll others because the emotional reaction they get from it is the only emotional connection that they can get. They've no idea how to do it in the real world because it requires thought. Then the person's reaction might stop you from doing it. So when they go online, they can think about it, they can create kind of the perfect thing to get a response from. Someone emotionally reacts and they go, oh, I can actually emotionally connect to people. And it's that kind of piece about any reaction is better than no reaction at all. So if you feel isolated in the world, nobody notices you, I can't do anything, and then suddenly you get a negative reaction, the logic in that person's brain is, it's better than no reaction at all. That's no consolation to the person who's been trolled and their feelings have been hurt. Yeah. But from their mind, it's okay, I do exist. Somebody actually knows I exist in the world, and that's better than feeling isolated.
Do we think, you know, that the fact that fake news is so much in the news right now, that fake news is kind of like all around the place, that like fake news contributed to, I suppose, the success of Brexit and Trump, that's kind of waking people up a little bit to kind of like, I mean, those particular extremes of online behaviour?
I think it shows people, like we've had people commenting who'd be like, if they don't like a story, they'd be like, that's fake news. And you're like, that's
kind of a cop out.
Yeah, so it's kind of gone from being like an actual thing, which is problematic, to like, I don't like this, therefore it's fake. But I think it's good to let people realise that actually everything you consume on the internet, you have to be really kind of cynical about it. Mm-hmm. Even news websites, you know, every news website, you know, has a range of stories on it. And there might be ones where you kind of might think, I want to hear the other side to that story. Or everybody, you know, the West talks about Russia in this way. Maybe I want to see how Russian media talks about it or whatever, just to have a fully formed idea. You know, so I think it is good for people to realise that you have to be a little bit cynical, you have to have your eyes open, and that also you can be totally sold a pup as well, and that you can have sites like Breitbart that are insanely popular, and if you look at what they're publishing, there's so many massive question marks around what they actually publish. You know, but I think the fact then that you have, you know, Trump allowing people into the press room in the White House who come from these kind of, you know, more right-wing websites and who wouldn't normally be validated by a president, being validated and being called on by Sean Spicer before you have people from ABC or CNN or whoever being called on, those are all really worrying signs too. So people are getting more aware, but then they're also seeing these really weird things happening in real life by powerful people that are showing them that actually fake news sites, or, you know, right-wing news sites or questionable news sites have a lot of power.
Yeah. Mm.
So, I mean, it's kind of a bit...
It's the thing about accountability. Like, it's funny because, like, I'm not great at following the actual world of politics because I just still find it so confusing, and I just always feel like the big old dumbass who doesn't get the which party is which thing. And I think a lot of people feel that way, but you still, like you say, you try and have that, like, thing of, well, this outlet leans a little more conservative, so they might feel this way about this party and vice versa. And it's a funny thing with Trump where you're seeing that super right-wingy, like, Breitbart and Co. kind of vibe where he brings them into the press room and he gives them exclusives and he, like, obviously just watches Fox News all day and parrots their talking points, which is so strange. Mm-hmm. But then also, I've noticed, particularly with American journalists, because I think they're kind of feeling the fear legitimately and also just are looking for clicks from their other side of the audience, of they're holding him and the... not the panel, what's the... cabinet, see, there you go, another thing. They're holding them super accountable, which I'm actually glad for, but I'm also thinking, well, like, I too, like, everyone enjoys a Barack and Biden meme, and they're great guys, but, like, you know, every politician does shitty stuff.
Yeah.
Now, listen, to me, Trump is the shittiest of the shit, we're speaking of toilets earlier, but, like, you know, this idea is that we actually should probably be holding all of our politicians accountable. Like, as much as I'm all for Ellen dancing with Hillary Clinton on her chat show, maybe we shouldn't have politicians doing that. There's this weird thing where I think a lot of us, myself included, are going, we've kind of been letting people get away with shit for a long time. And and it goes back to the thing of, it's not just online, it's the public sphere.
Yeah.
It's every day. You're like, there's a certain sort of like thing we've accepted, particularly in Ireland, where people go, Ireland's not a right-wing country. I'm like, no, it's because all our parties, like, are generally kind of hard to distinguish, and we're not used to holding them accountable. We just roll our eyes at all of them. It's an apathy thing almost. You know, now we're all like, oh, we actually have to really call out politicians because they're full of shit. Wait, okay. So in a way, that's sort of bracing and great, but it's also making me go, okay, but if a liberal or democratic president gets in the next time in the States, are we all just going to sit back then for four years? Because actually, we probably need to be on everybody's case all the time, which is exhausting.
people get away with a lot if they're like charismatic, and if like if you're on like the left side and you're like, Obama's so nice, he's just so like
handsome, so mean, so friendly.
But then you're like Yemen though, you know, like there's
but them drones though.
that's a very good observation, because I mean there was an interview that you see with Jake Tapper from CNN, and he was kind of like saying at the moment, you know, it's really, everyone's kind of going on about like how much work we're doing, but we were doing this before, yeah. And the interviewer said to him, well, I mean, you're now part of kind of like me and, you know, you're part of the resistance, and he kind of snapped, I'm not part of the resistance, I'm a journalist, yeah. My job is to keep everyone to account, yeah. Regardless of who's in the White House, you know, and I think that's kind of important as well. And so again, it goes back to kind of a learning thing, you know. But I want to go back to something else, but I'm kind of the fact that Connor has to head off somewhere else, but one last question, which is to do with kind of like this issue. It's that John Ronson wrote a book about shaming and how people are shamed online. What's all your take on this? I mean, you know, like, I mean, does it kind of come down to the fact that if the person who's been shamed is someone whose views you disagree with, you're kind of going, ha, brilliant, he or she got caught. And if it's someone that, like, is from your particular viewpoint who gets caught, it's like, this is terrible. I'm curious about that one.
I find this, sorry, I've like jumped straight away to answer the shaming question. I struggle with that, because I kind of see where you're coming from with that point of view. And there is a thing of like, you want to respect different views, but it's tricky because also, like, I know is it Justine Sacco, the name of the lady he writes about, who made the joke about getting AIDS in Africa as she got on the plane. And she said after the fact, I was doing a riff on the clueless white woman who doesn't know anything about race, but I did. It's like, yeah, but if you're a white person making a joke about race, you can't assume everyone's going to read it that way, because people who aren't white are so used to white people just being clueless. Yeah. So it's not an equal thing where liberals are not tolerant of views on the right, because a lot of the time the views are not equal. Like, someone who gets shamed for saying all gay people should die in a fire is different to someone who gets shamed for saying they don't get the Eurovision. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, but at the same time, I know what you mean. It can feel, and I've been guilty of watching this and maybe even doing it myself, you can kind of pile on and agree with how right you are because someone's not more read up on XYZ. So there's a degree of, when it comes to the lighter stuff, I think sometimes we could ease up, or when it comes to like, I even was talking to a friend about this, and they were moaning about how people are too, like, someone who's also gay as well, going, I feel we're too sensitive about trans at the moment. I'm like, we're not actually too sensitive. It's that some people are who either from that community or who are more well-versed know the terms better, and they think that we're all caught up. And it's a weird in-betweeny, awkward teenage stage where the rest of us are like, this is how pronouns work when someone transitions. Yeah. It's almost like a style guide. You just kind of have to figure it out. It's not that hard. But in the in-between, it can feel like someone is being massively mean-spirited, and so it's a weird one. I just struggle with kind of going, let everybody say what they want. But I also do struggle with this sort of smugness. And it can come from even just journalists sometimes of like, well, you're wrong on that, buddy. And I'm going to get milk six opinion pieces out of it. It's a weird one.
I think as well, like, people can be like extremely harsh on people whose views they don't agree with. But I think there's a problem as well. Like, even like if you're like on the left, or if you are part of a minority, I don't think it's fair for you to expect the same level of knowledge from everybody. And I think that's kind of mean when you're like, someone's like, oh, it's like, you know, when someone uses the wrong pronouns by accident for someone and then they feel bad, but then they're kind of mocked for it. Like, and that's completely coming from an innocent place. And I don't think that's fair. But I think, like Connor said, if it's someone being like, I think that you should go to hell because you have a girlfriend, you're a bit like, no, I'm going to say something mean. Like, not say something mean, but just kind of call you out.
I'm not going to let you be like, that's just your view, okay.
Yeah, because it hurts people's feelings, like personal feelings, when it comes to like social issues and stuff. But I think you shouldn't assume that everyone has the same level of knowledge as you, because that's kind of like prejudicial as well, because not everybody has the same level of education or interest and stuff. So
I think there's two things with shaming for me. I think we create rules and we create justifications for it. So if somebody particularly famous does something and we shame them for it, we think, well, it's good enough for you because you're in the public eye, and because you're in the public eye, you deserve it for being there, for having all that attention. You have to take whatever comes with it. And I don't think that's particularly fair. And I think people kind of are less likely to shame kind of just random individuals on Twitter because, well, look, you're just an ordinary person, so therefore you don't deserve it. That it comes with kind of that nature of being known and putting yourself out there. You've got to take whatever is kind of coming with it, which I think is probably unfair.
I think, like, just like you can see someone who, you know, shares a photograph of like their granddad making them a fry or whatever, and that photo is on Twitter and it goes viral, which happened there recently, you can have a randomer who says something kind of stupid, or, you know, offensive or whatever, and it can you know, by some kind of thing, it can just snowball, just like it can be ignored. And I think when it gets to the stage where you have people being doxxed, which is like when all their kind of personal information is shared or looked up or whatever, found online, that's when you're kind of like, geez, like this has gone from somebody saying something really fucking stupid to, you know, potentially having their, like in John Ronson's book, having their whole career destroyed. And I think that's what I do feel very uncomfortable about that. Not that I don't want to see people who do bad things go unpunished, but I do sometimes see the Twitter pylon, and I'm sure I've probably taken part in some things where I'm like, I can't believe that person said that. But then realizing, oh, this is like a real person reading this, and this is, if that was me and I said something absolutely dopey, like I'm sure I've said dopey things over the years, you know, I wouldn't want to be treated like that. Now, thankfully, I wouldn't be saying burn in a fire or whatever, like, you know, but like, you know, things can go to a really quickly go to an extreme online in a way that they don't in real life, and that is the danger, where you have this mob mentality. And it's very easy to say like mob mentality and sound like you're like the internet should be just, you know, switched off, but it does happen.
We saw it with the guy with that shot the lion in Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Where they were, here's his phone number, ring him, get the switchboard, here's his address, and like nobody would agree with what he did. But then there was that mob mentality of, we're going to get him now, we're going to punish him, and everywhere ring him.
And shoot him.
It's making an example of someone. Yeah.
Or even the thing which happened last week with the guy in Korea, and the two kids kind of come into the room and start wobbling around the place.
BBC
and next thing, his wife comes in to grab the kids and take him out. And like, I was amazed at all these kind of like amazing hot takes. She's a nanny. And then there's like, look at the way she treats a child. And it's like, I was thinking, like, lads, this is a 15-second video of a dude, like, just kind of like, his kids have come into the room, he's laughing in some ways. How did this become such a thing? And like, I mean, from a journalist's point of view, it's interesting, kind of like, I mean, what like the way something like that, the way we react to something like that, and the way that, like, I mean, this again feeds our behavior online.
Yeah, and I think we're really used to seeing things happen online and then immediately be like, hot take, or this is a story, or people are interested in that, and there's this like instinctual reaction to, you know, you kind of know there's something can happen as a result of that, and also that you analyze it and feel like you have this right and ability, I mean, in general, not just journalists, but you have this right and ability to comment on it, so that's where you're sharing it. And so the, you know, I think the viral thing in particular was just so, I feel like it was like even bigger or like more of a thing a few years ago. I know like the journals changed a lot, but in the early days, something that was viral was, you know, great, everybody's talking about it, and there's something you can do around that. And I think that's slightly changed. People are slightly kind of changing their attitude around that. But I think as a journalist too, you have to stand back and be like, you know, is this something that is a story? Is it not a news story? Is there some value to it? You know, am I just responding to this because I've just been given this video and I think it's hilarious? But that video also, though, gave people an opportunity to talk about different topics, like about the idea that people assumed that the woman was a nanny just because she was Asian. And that in its sense, you know, in a way gives us a jumping off point to talk about our own perception as, you know, if you're Caucasian, how you view other people of different races and those assumptions. Like, because, you know, when I looked at it, that was one of my thoughts too. And I had to check myself and be like, why did I immediately think that? You know, I thought I was kind of right on or whatever. So in a way, you can use those things as an opportunity for you to get a learning out of it as well too. But at the same time, you know,
it's exhausting too, like the takes yeah. Like, I just want to watch a fucking video.
So much to learn about
shut
the world.
The fuck up. That can be very frustrating at times.
Yeah definitely.
Excellent stuff, that's great, thank you all very much. Big round of applause please for Mark, for Ellen, for Aoife and for Connor.
Gonna make a dramatic exit after saying "shut the fuck up" into the microphone.
So thank you very much, Connor. So, anyone got any questions for the audience? Well, we've got, while we're still here, have we covered absolutely everything from shaming to 4chan, from fake news to Breitbart, from Trump to the guy who shot the elephant? Yep, just person back there.
Sorry, just a general question. Do you think that online abuse stuff? Do you think it's gotten worse since professional trolls like Katie Hopkins and Milo have broken mainstream, or did they break
even
mainstream because online abuse is so bad?
It's like a snake eating its own tail. It's kind of hard.
Well, I think they're given, when they're given platforms,
like legitimacy. Kind of is like, this person has a column and they're allowed to say that refugees are cockroaches, which makes me feel like maybe I'm right about thinking that they're cockroaches. Mm. So it kind of facilitates like a serious conversation about stuff that people would usually be like, that's unthinkable. People are human beings, you know, not insects.
Yeah,
her
behavior is rewarded.
Yeah.
So she gets more followers, like, she gets more attention, she can say what she wants on paper, you know, with the guard, and the, what's the guard, who's the mail?
Daily Mail.
Yeah.
Mail, and they'll protect her, they'll pay her legal bills, they'll give her a radio show. So people are going, hang on a second, I can be naturally offensive, abusive, and rude, and I'll get paid for it. Great. So for someone who wants that quick road to fame, yes, you sent them a template.
Yeah, and you're setting the bar like super low all the time for what is acceptable. And it's kind of like, you know, with Trump as well, you know, his behavior has set the bar for being a US president to a certain level now as well. And I think that, you know, I can see why someone like Katie Hopkins was given loads of, you know, airtime and stuff like that at a certain point. But then there was a tipping point where it was just like, this is just like, there's just no point. So I think that like media, you know, outlets are very responsible for giving these people a platform and for being able to step back and be like, actually, no, enough is enough. Now, she was sued recently for comments that she made about Jack Monroe, the blogger. So seeing things like that, I think, is helping to swing things a little bit too. But it's definitely something that, like, we would have discussions about that in the newsroom about, should we cover this particular thing? Has this particular person got anything new to say, or is this more of the same stuff they say all the time? And is that in any way valuable to the readers too?
I think what Eve just says is so true, because, you know, and sometimes I see, like, I mean, even our own newspaper, the Irish Times, like, covering stories. I'm going, why are we covering the story? And then, like, 10 minutes later, I'll come back, I look at the most read, and there's that story at number one, you know. And it just comes out to simple newspaper economics, you know. But like Mark says, so right, that, like, I mean, there's a reward for this. So suddenly you've got people out there who are online, who are being nasty little bollocks online, and because they're thinking, like, hey, I can be the new Katie Hopkins, I can be the new Ina Doherty, you know, that suddenly becomes like a career path.
I think it's even riskier than that, because if Katie Hopkins sets the bar in terms of how offensive you want to be, and you want to stand out to be the new Katie Hopkins, you have to be even more offensive and more rude to stand out from her, because she's already set that bar, which is riskier because it's then rewarding even worse behaviour.
What a horrific thought.
Thanks for that, Mark.
Next question. No, we covered everything.
Excellent.
You got a question? No. Sorry, that was me being sorry. I was shamed you there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, keep it for Twitter. Keep it for Twitter.
And publicly, like, shame you.
That's great. Thank you all very much for coming out tonight. My only advice about being online nice behavior is basically last 6 weeks I joined Instagram, and Instagram is possibly the nicest form of all. It is absolutely beautiful. Lovely. No one's nasty to you, and like there's all these people like immediately kind of give you a heart for your photograph. So it's great. So
guaranteed you're going to get abused now. Guaranteed.
Let's see, Kim Kardashian. She probably gets a little bit of abuse.
Yeah,
love Instagram.
Okay, so thanks a million. Thanks a million to Mark, to Ellen, really, and to Aoife, and to the party, Connor. Thank you, and thank you all very much for turning out tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks to Aoife, Ellen, Connor and Mark for joining us at Banter, and thanks to Benny Johnson for her help with this event. The podcast was recorded by Garrett Hines, and the Bantercast series producer is Tanya White. Check out thisisbanter.com for news we're up to at Banter, plus you can listen back there to all the Banter podcasts to date. We'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, goodbye and take care.